Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Merlina Valentine. Merlina is an international speaker, author, and consultant. She retired after 30 years, having served as a teacher, principal, and executive director in an extraordinary successful school district in Louisiana. Her transformational leadership as a school principal resulted in her school's recognition as top gain school. Ms. Valentine has received numerous state, national, and international awards and commendations such as Teacher of the Year, Principal of the Year, and the University of New Orleans College of Education and Human Development Alumna of the Year. Ms. Valentine was featured in several news segments and articles, including a spotlight in Ebony Magazine. Audiences were captivated by her inspirational story of survival, courage, and hope when she was a featured segment on the Today Show. She was recently chosen as the 2020 Inspirational Speaker of the Year in an international competition hosted by Speaker Slam of Canada. In the face of tragedy and daunting obstacles, Ms. Valentine unleashed a remarkable inner strength that enabled her to lead by example. As a quadruple amputee navigating life's tumultuous terrain, Merlina demonstrates that no matter what challenges surface in your path, you have the power within yourself to overcome it and cross the bridge from impossible to possible. Through her current endeavors as an international speaker and consultant, Merlina empowers audiences to embrace their personal power and prove what's possible. Welcome to the podcast, Merlina.
Thank you so much. I am delighted to spend time with you today and just, you know, share my message.
Well, I am so happy I have a chance to talk with you. I heard you speak on Principal Caffelli's AP Leadership Academy in the fall and, you know, was really inspired by your story. So let's just hit the ground running with your trenches story. Tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Yes. So my trenches story began in August of 2007. I was an elementary school principal, pre-K to fifth grade school with 650 amazing little scholars. And I was at Meet the Teacher Night, which is probably my most favorite night of the year to kick off the school year, when I had a pain in my side. And it was excruciating. And Wednesday was going to be the first day of school. So I knew I had to get that checked out. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed on Tuesday with a kidney stone. And Dana, I was not the least bit concerned because mm-hmm. I knew how common that was. And I figured that I would get treatment and be right there at the first day of school, ready to just welcome everyone back to a new year. But on Tuesday night, after visiting my doctor and being diagnosed with that kidney stone, I became violently ill. It felt like the worst case of the flu ever. Mm-hmm. And so after struggling for many hours at home, I decided to go and get checked out at the emergency room, where there, after many hours, they couldn't really figure out what was going on with me. And I was sent home, told maybe it was the flu, maybe it was a virus. And when I asked about it being related to my kidney stone, I was told probably not, but to follow up with my doctor. On Wednesday morning, I couldn't lift my head off the pillow. And so I missed the first day of school to go to hospital number two, where after many hours, they decided to ambulance me to the third hospital for more specialized care. And there again, they could not pinpoint exactly what was going on with me. And at that point, it was critical because now I was in major organ failure. Mm-hmm. My lungs, my kidneys, my heart were all shutting down. And after doing some very important testing and trying to figure out what the next steps were, they decided to ambulance me to their main campus, okay, the fourth hospital by ambulance. And there, the last words I heard were a doctor sharing with the nurses that if I had arrived just 30 minutes later, I would not have made it. And my family that night was told I had a less than 10% chance of surviving. Glad I didn't hear those odds at all, Dana, mm-hmm. because I was a fighter. And so today I stand before you as a 100% someone who is thriving in life. You see, the kidney stone blocked my kidney mm-hmm. and it caused an infection to just ravage my body. It was something called sepsis. And that was a word I had not heard before it happened to me. So I'm always willing to share that so people become more aware of what that is and that they need to advocate to ask about it whenever there's an infection or something, they're experiencing the symptoms that I had. Mm-hmm. I spent 3 weeks in the intensive care unit. That was in the trenches because I didn't know from minute to minute what would happen. I was in a medically induced coma for 7 days and I spent months in the hospital just fighting and clawing my way back. I won the battle. Of course, I survived. And then it came time to fight this war to save my life. Of course, they had to amputate both of my hands and both of my legs below the knee. And so I became a quadruple amputee. And at that point, many people expected the tragedy to define me and to dictate how the rest of my life would go. But that's not who I am. See, I decide how life will go. I decide on those defining moments. And August of 2009, 2 years exactly to the date of my illness, I danced my way back into my school building as principal. I clawed and crawled my way out of the trenches because there was nothing more motivating to me than to get back in that building and to be principal again and finish what I'd started only 2 or 3 years prior. So, it was a journey back that wasn't easy. Every day that I live, there are challenges and struggles, but I do know this. My life right now is incredible. I have a message that resonates with people. And more than that, when I returned to that building, I know what happened. People began to focus on my possibilities, not just my disability. And it was infectious across our building that we no longer just tolerated people, but we celebrated our differences. And that was the main goal for me, to get back there and to be a model for everyone in that building of perseverance and courage and hope.
And we talked a little bit in the pre-chat about also the students and the staff at your school. When you were hospitalized, that kept you going. You constantly received cards and messages from them, and just knowing that you were, you know, welcome back, that you were going to make it out of the hospital one day, right?
Yes. So I think that was the thing that I look forward to the most each day, because every single day there were messages arriving, there were letters and posters and pretty little notes from my students that said they couldn't wait to see me again. And they were wishing, you know, that I would get better quickly. And those things are still in a box in my house because I held on to them, because those were the things that really made that journey, that fight that I had to have to endure so much and to be able to come back from something so tragic, it made it possible. And I will forever remember those messages from my staff, from my teachers, from my students, and the community itself, and how they rallied around me to make sure that I had everything that I needed to be able to fight.
Yeah, it's so inspiring to hear, like, you know, so that was definitely the most in the trenches story of all the guests that I've interviewed, and just, you know, having that will, that willpower, you know, because a lot of people have been hospitalized, but having to be in a medically induced coma, losing limbs and making your way back into that school. So I was interested in hearing a little bit about how you approached the principalship prior to your infection and then afterwards. How did that change?
It changed drastically, and I did not anticipate that. I was already a very dedicated and committed leader. I believe that my 17 years in the classroom prepared me for that leadership role. I knew what it meant to be a servant leader and how much I appreciated and acknowledged everyone in my building, that we were a collective effort in everything that we did. But when I returned, I wasn't prepared for how passionate I would be and how determined I would be to, I guess, level up is what I could say, my leadership and being able to connect with people in a different way. You see, by having gone through something so tragic and then now living life with a disability and just being in that building and wanting to be not just accepted, but embraced, and in knowing that people truly embraced me as the leader and that my physical challenges did not stop me from being able to do the things that I used to do, but do them in a different way. And in my return, I became a model just by walking in the room. there were students who would watch me walk through the door and figure out how I was going to write and be able to type the notes that I needed when I was mm-hmm. doing my observations. They were watching everything that I did. And so I knew that as much as I was a leader before that was visible and very present in our building, now I was being recognized, acknowledged, embraced by people that before they just saw their principal walking through the halls, but now their principal had a story mm-hmm. and she'd mm-hmm. been through some things. And so my students who had struggles and challenges, and even my students who had disabilities, they were looking to me to say, this is how we move forward when things happen in life. This is how we persevere. And mm-hmm. she used to tell us all the time that, you know, we can never say the word can't, and we have to give it our best try. But now we see her doing it, and so it motivates us. I had students actually tell me that. I remember this one little boy who missed a lot of school and had a lot of illnesses and challenges and struggles. And my first quarter back in that building, he had perfect attendance. Mm-hmm. And I remember his mother coming up after the ceremony and saying, you know, your presence in this building matters because my son will not stay home for the things that he used to stay home for, like mm-hmm. a headache or a stomach ache. And for whatever reason, he was avoiding certain things. Now he says, if you can come to school with all that you deal with, he has to be yeah. here. And that was for me, my full circle moment in knowing that I do matter and I am in the right place doing the right work at the right time. It made me the kind of leader that I dreamed of, you know, of becoming. And I evolved into someone that really her presence in the building, it mattered significantly to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the kids really were able to learn a lot from you. And, you know, they were curious about how you used your prosthetics and yeah. just, you know, it was a very learning experience for them as well. And I think, like you said, really being that role model for yes. kids that had all different kinds of differences. And, you know, I hope, you know, if there are, you know, staff members in other schools that they are able to be that role model as well, if they have some type of a difference as well. And let's talk a little bit about, so you're doing keynotes now, and you've done some remote and you've done some in person. Which ones are the most popular and well-received? Kind of what topics do you talk about, and what are some of the upcoming keynotes you have in the spring of 2022?
Sure. I've been extremely busy in the last year. And
this podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
And 2022 has started out very well, and I've just finished up two keynotes. I would say that the most popular thing that people want right now is to have someone speak to them about being able to make it through uncertain times mm-hmm. and perseverance that it takes to be able to do what we need to do in these unprecedented times. And knowing that I had no idea when my entire journey would, I guess, pivot for me and mm-hmm. I could get back to living the quality of life that I needed. There was no future plan. There was no laid out treatment plan. Every day it was just take it 1 minute at a time, not even one day at a time mm-hmm. until I got where I wanted to be. And people are looking for that. They're looking for someone that can give them a little bit of inspiration and remind them to hold on to hope because better days are coming. We've all made it through 100% of our worst days. And so in that time, we need to just be able to embrace all that we've overcome, not just what we've accomplished. So most of my topics are about overcoming adversity, embracing change, persevering tough times. What do I do when change chooses me like it chose me? And we don't have a choice about it. The pandemic chose all of us, and our entire world has shifted into something we were not anticipating and not prepared for. And so I get to share that message of what do we do when change chooses us and we don't allow that change to manage us. We manage that change. I would say my most popular keynote is one that I do that's entitled Prove What's Possible. That in life, we always have an option to view things as impossible or possible. And it's a choice and a decision we get to make as to how we're going to navigate things that are challenging and tough times and uncertain times. And it's up to us to make that choice. to see what's possible, to start to pursue the possibilities in life, and to take the I am out of impossible and do what's necessary to reach your goals. And as educators, that means that we're doing what we need to do to ensure the success of every student every day. And so those are some of the things that right now I've been requested to do. I also do a keynote on passion, perseverance, and purpose, and how much we need to hold on to why we do what we do, because that will be our anchor right now as we're trying to figure out what tomorrow will look like and what do I need to do to prepare for the next day when I don't know what's ahead of me. So I find that just my message of overcoming adversity is the springboard to everything else that people are looking for right now, to be able to just get by and know that tomorrow it will be a better day than today was. Even if it's 1% better, I know that it will be a better day. So I think it's all that instilling hope in people and reminding them of the power they possess to influence others and to impact the lives of others. Those are the things people request from me, and they know it's from my heart because I'm living and breathing this every single day.
And has the pandemic put maybe a wrench in any of your professional speaking? I know you probably did a lot of remote in 2020, but have you kept up with as many of the obligations that you had, or have did you have to just kind of take a break for a little while?
Well, 2020 and beginning in March of 2020, I had so many cancellations that were for conferences or larger capacity crowds, and people were very leery of gathering at all. So I did pivot to having to do more virtual. And as just as our educators struggled with how do we engage our students and build relationships with our students through, you know, the technology world, I had to figure that out as well, because as requests started coming in for more virtual keynotes and presentations, it was a struggle for me to be able to make that connection that we normally do in person, when you can see the head nods and you can feel the energy and people are saying things in the audience. And then here you were, just as our educators struggled, there were people who were not comfortable being on camera. So they would be in in the session, but the camera would be off. And so I'm looking for the smiles and the head nods. And, you know, it was a challenging thing. And I definitely prefer in person, but I did what I needed to do in order to meet the needs of the people who were requesting me. 2021 opened some doors and there were more in-person events, and I was ecstatic, and things started to kind of turn around, and there would be safety measures in place. You know, there were social distancing. So I felt very comfortable being in person. And up until yesterday, when, which was a keynote that I did, it was socially distanced. You know, there was masking. There were all these protocols in place. But I'm beginning to hear from several people that I've booked sessions with and conferences with and coaching, you know, presentations with, that possibly those things could be postponed. Many delayed or even canceled. So they just were giving me a heads up that if things continue to, you know, go the way that they're going now, there's a potential that those events and, you know, the things that I have planned could be postponed or canceled. And what I'm going to do is take it minute by minute, just as I did when I was recovering. And if things have to shift again, I'm ready, because that's all that part of embracing change is being able to pivot and do what's necessary to make it work. I'm about whatever it takes, that's what I'll do. And so I'm just going to continue to pursue those things in person. But if virtual happens to be what's next on my docket, that's what I'll do.
Yeah, I like that analogy of talking about the teachers. And, you know, you had some of those same struggles as a keynote speaker and, you know, talking to that screen of people with their cameras off.
So. Yes.
Tell me a little bit about your school context. So after you went back to being a principal at the same elementary school, you were then promoted to executive director and then retired in 2016. So tell me a little bit about that journey, how many years you were back as a principal, and then a little bit of your work as executive director before you retired.
So when I returned, it was 2009, and until 2013, I was that building's principal. Enjoyed every minute of it. I never envisioned leaving. I actually had this plan that I would retire from that school and that would be the end of my career, because that is how much the work that I was doing was so rewarding, so gratifying. And, you know, it was just something I looked forward to every day. I had no dreams or aspirations of going anywhere else. We had a new superintendent in 2013. She happened to be a former principal of mine when I was in the classroom. So she knew me very well, and she followed my leadership journey. She was there every minute of my recovery, checking on me and making sure that, you know, I knew that if I was going to return as principal, the school would be mine. They didn't ask me if I could do the job, would I do the job, and what would it take for them from them to be able to have me do the job. They just said, it's yours. And so I knew how much she believed in me. And she showed up one day and she said, you know, I'm putting together my executive team and I want you to be a part of that. And I said, what does that mean? You know, I had no idea. And she said, I want you to be the executive director of our elementary schools and be able to, I guess, support other principals to do what you've done here that's been so successful and effective, and have it happen in our entire district. And at first I was very leery, because the reason that I was a principal, the reason I was a teacher, and the why in my life was about children. And that every single day I could connect and meet children and see their successes and help them, you know, through their struggles, support them on their journey. And I questioned, how could I do that working from central office? And how would I be able to build those relationships that happen every single day in my building when now I was responsible for over 9 campuses? But looking at her and her vision for what she wanted to do in our district, I had to get on board. I said, if you need me, I am yours. And so that journey, it took a while for me to figure out what I could do to continue to feel like I was connected to students and making a difference with students. And when I worked with principals, when I visited their school campuses, those things happen. And I didn't know they would, but they did. I started having kids looking forward to me showing up on their campus, or I'd meet people in the community and they recognized me because of something I said to their child in the classroom visit. So it still allowed me to do those things that made me wake up every day excited about my career, just in a different way. And now my impact, it was, you know, exploded exponentially by being able to visit 9 campuses and to coach and work with principals to ensure that success was happening in their campus. So I think I wasn't ready for that, but it was something that I didn't know that I needed to do. And that would be how I would end my career, knowing that I now touch the lives of thousands of students every day. It was a very incredible experience.
And often it takes somebody to really see that potential in you. As you said, you were perfectly content ending your career in the school building. But once you got used to that new role and how you could impact people differently, then you realized that that was a great place to end your work in the district. But then also now with your keynoting and your writing, you're impacting the lives of leaders and educators worldwide.
And the great thing was that by being at that level of the organization, I could now say that I've worked at every level in you know, the district. And so when I go out to speak and meet people and coach people, I can look at it from so many different perspectives. And that's what she wanted me to see, to broaden my, you know, scope and my view, to see things a little differently than just laser focused on my school and my students. And that helps me when I'm now coaching other leaders who have bigger roles than just the school site or even corporate America. So I'm glad I had that experience. I'm forever grateful for her seeing that in me. When people thought it was impossible for me to even return as principal, here I was doing something at another level. And so it was very rewarding work.
In the pre-chat, you told me that you have 2 new books coming out. So tell me a little bit about those books. You've previously written a few books, And I did not mention them, but there was one called Daisy, the Extra Special Flower, and that's a children's book, I would assume.
Yes.
And then also Living Without Limits, Limits, that's about your journey that you talked about in the trench story. So what are the kind of the themes of the books that you have coming out, and do you have an idea of a release date?
So one of them, because of the success of my children's book, Daisy the Extra Special Flower, which takes us on a journey where a flower loses four of her petals, but continues to live life. So I've used that when I go out and speak to students in schools and do keynotes for them. But just knowing that there was another group of students that really touched my heart recently, and it's some middle schoolers and high schoolers that I've been connected with and mentoring a few of them, and the struggles that they're having just since the pandemic began, but, you know, things that they're sharing with me about their, you know, self-worth and questioning that, and some of the things that they have with their body images and the acceptance that they're not receiving from people that they expected to just unconditionally love them. I'm hearing all these different themes from them. And so I think that I kind of brainstorm, and I'm going to begin there with a book that is geared not just to the elementary group like my first book, but in knowing that there were so many things about myself when I became a quadruple amputee, like looking in at myself in the mirror that first time after my amputation. I mean, I had to remind myself to breathe because I didn't recognize that broken version of myself. I was always independent, always doing, you know, what I needed. And now I was questioning, what will your life be like? And I want to take them on that journey to being able to embrace who I am, flaws and all, and to know my worth and my value. And so I'm working on something for that middle high school age where they're trying to discover who they are and how they can, you know, fit in. And I want them to know it's okay to stand out. And so that's the angle I'm coming from, that we're all special. We're all different, unique. And I'm going to build upon what Daisy started, but make it age appropriate for that next, you know, age level bracket. So that's the first one that I'm probably 6 months or more away from even being ready to publish, because every time I speak with another one, there's another aspect I want to make sure I include in it. So at some point I've got to say that's enough. But, you know, it's a journey that I want to be sure that I give something back to the kids that mean so much to me. And a lot of them are my former students. So that's one. The other one that I'm working on is a book for school leaders and what it takes to lead, not in a pandemic, not in, you know, a certain space, but what does it mean to be a leader that can endure all of the things that we're facing every day? Like right now, there are these staffing shortages, and that's all I hear from those who I coach. You know, how do I retain? It used to be, how do I acquire the best talent and get them in my building? And now it's, how do I keep them? And how do I recruit people and then retain them and have that retention piece built into my leadership? And what do I do to support my veteran teachers who are dealing with things they've never imagined, and they're considering, you know, maybe this is the time to walk away. So I want to make sure that I'm addressing those things that are current issues, but just overall, what does it mean to be a servant leader? You know, I'm hearing from some former teachers, and they're always questioning things about, well, you did it this way, but my principal does it this way now. And I'm trying to, you know, bridge that gap between every leader is the leader that they need to be. But I want to be able to offer what made my leadership effective, successful, a leader that actually had people choosing to follow me instead of being mandated to follow me. And so that's where I'm working on the kind of leader that we need to be. And there'll be a big piece about how do you lead following an event, or because for me, I led right after Hurricane Katrina. I was a first year principal when that hurricane hit, and took in 100 additional students. So there are things I will include in there about what do you do when the unexpected happens as a leader, and how do you lead your school in trying and difficult times? But I want to make sure that they're focused just on being a great leader, an effective leader, a leader that has a heart for the people that they're actually serving. And I think that's the piece for me. It's about serving the people in my building, in my community. And I want people to know how powerful that was and in my success as a leader.
And do you have any idea maybe of when that would be published?
That one? I am hoping for at the end of 2022, only because right now I have a lot going on. You know, I was displaced after Hurricane Ida, still living in temporary housing. And so a lot of the things that I had like really moving forward have now had to be put on the back burner because I'm trying to rebuild my house and keep going with my current keynotes and my business. So that is never going to be completely out of my sight, but I'm going to be able to focus better when things get a little, I guess, back to normal, whatever normal might be for me. So I'm pushing that as a December, but if it happens earlier, then I'm great. I try to make sure that my goals are realistic and that I don't overwhelm myself by trying to do too much at the same time.
Yeah, no, that's really, you know, you kind of have so much going on with your speaking engagements and with the house and everything. So but that's good to know kind of when to expect that. It's been such an informing conversation to learn about your leadership and how you serve others and your experiences. Out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
Wow. It's been such a pleasure to be able to just share and just be my, you know, transparent and authentic self. So I appreciate you and the questions that you pose. It allows me to do that. For me, I just think it's about people being able to know that things in life don't go as planned. Things happen. Life can try to throw us a plan B and we can either accept it, embrace it, and figure out how to manage that. But what I find people do is people like to react and they want to react quickly to things. And sometimes for me, the best route that I could to overcome all the things that I face is to learn to slow down and respond, to really take into account all of the things that are happening and how many people it will impact and what will it do in my life before I actually decide what I want to do. You know, the tragedy and all the things that happened to me, it's 5% that it happened. And it's been 95% how I've responded to it. That's what has made me someone that could overcome this tremendous adversity and be able to thrive in this new life. I think we've got to stop fearing things that are unknown and the uncertain and figure out that we're more than capable, more than prepared to be able to make it through. I'm constantly hearing people say, I can't wait till things get back to normal, right? Isn't that what we always hear? And I question myself by saying, is normal the best we can do?
Yeah.
So I want people to just know this has been the time where we've been forced to slow down, forced to take stock on what really matters, but it's also given us the gift of time. And for me, it allowed me to reimagine, recreate who I am, redefine what I want in life and how I'm going to move forward in life. And so I just want us to remember that this change that we're in and all the things that are happening can be transformational if we allow that to happen by not resisting it, but figuring out how to let it make us become the best version of ourselves. I have developed into Merlina 2.0, Dana, the person I didn't know I was looking for. I found here in the messiest, scariest, most uncertain place that I could be when I was in the trenches, and I've come out of it better, not bitter. And I want people to know that there is a way that you could choose to move forward. It is up to you. We get the power of choice every day. Why not choose to say as I do, every day is a good day. I only have good days.
Yeah, that's so impactful. And like you said, it's all how people react. I mean, there's a lot of people that are burning out, a lot of negativity going around amongst educators. You know, I've heard other people that speak, you know, and they're saying, you know, I had that burnout years ago. Now I've learned to react differently. It's that growth. It's that looking inside. Yes. It's that knowing, like you said, tomorrow will be better. Right. And that I love that reaction. Like you said, it's 5% or 10% of what happens to you, 90 to 95% of how you react to that. Yeah,
absolutely.
So where can people connect with you and find you online?
Sure. So I'm on every social media, I believe, platform that there is. Facebook, you can search for Merlina Valentine. I have also a business page, Merlina Valentine Consulting. I am on Instagram as Merlina Valentine. I am on Twitter as Merlina Inspires. And I also am on LinkedIn. And I do have a YouTube channel. I'm only beginning it. So there are just a few videos, but I'm beginning to work on that. But the best way to find out about me, to contact me, especially if you're looking for me to support you in any way, is to go to my website at sherovalentine.net. That's sherovalentine.net. And everything you need to know about me can be found on that website.
Great, great. Well, I'll make sure to list those in the show notes. Well, thank you so much for being my guest on the Out of the Trenches podcast today.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed our conversation today.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.